This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And yes, you are on Bump and Beyond with me, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. And today is, as always, I'm making sure that you are informed and making the right choices and improving your parenting journey. So I'm looking forward to today's show for many reasons, and I'll get to it just now. But I think when it comes to feeding our children, I think it's one of the most major stresses as a parent. From the very beginning, when you start breastfeeding and you struggle with breastfeeding, it's uncomfortable, it's a new skill that you and your baby has to figure out. And then later on, just as you're starting to get the hang of breastfeeding, then you have to start introducing solids. And that's also stressful because you have to figure out what you're going to start with. Of course, if you want more information on that, please go listen to some of the podcasts we've done before, because we have spoken about introduction to solids as well. So very helpful to go listen to our podcast. This show and every show is available as a podcast on highfm.com. But yes, then obviously you go through the wonderfulness that is introduction of solids. And again, you're just kind of getting the hang of it. And then your child becomes a little bit older again. You've got variety that you're introducing. And yeah, the one day they love banana, the next day they hate banana. The one day they do this, and the next day they hate that thing. And that's specifically what I want to talk about today, is that picky eating phase. And I think it actually starts a little bit already sometimes before toddlerhood comes, but I do think it's synonymous a little bit with toddlerhood. Toddlers obviously being older than 12 months. And that is, yeah, toddlers by themselves are interesting and wonderful creatures. I always say to you, I don't mind babies. I love babies, but toddlers make me a lot more broody than babies do, because it is for me one of the cutest phases of the child's life. When they start interacting with you and they are just like little bundles of rainbows. and I love that. But as I said, it also obviously comes with some challenges that come with it. And picky eating is one of them, is that they do tend to wonder a little bit what they want to eat, and they're fussy about what they want to eat. But it also then brings an add-on stress, obviously, for us as parents, because now it's like, they were drinking so much milk. Should I give them milk? Should I give them more milk? Should I change what I'm eating? Or you're just feeling like, maybe as a mom or as a parent, that are they getting enough food in when they're not? Because sometimes it really feels like toddlers live on fresh air. And today, I've got clinical pediatric dietitian and founder of Nutripedes here to join me. She's also a very well-known author. Kath McGraw is joining me today. Hi, Kath. How are you?
Hi, Yolandi. So nice to be here. So excited for this.
Yes, I'm always excited, like I told you, to talk to you. Because it's for me surprising, and I feel like I know an odd amount about children's feeding already. Obviously not on your level, but every time I speak to you, I'm like walking away and I'm like, made some notes of my own that I can share with parents, because I always feel like I learn from you so much. And you've got a fantastic way of making it, or dumbing it down for us laymen. And making talking about food interesting. So yes, let's start off with what would you define as a picky eater?
So I think it's important to realize that most children, about 70% of children, will go through some picky eating phase at some point in their early childhood years. So it's quite normal. So we have our picky eater, who is really a child who will just go through a patch of being very specific about certain foods, but will eat a food from each of the food groups. And then we will get a picky eater who might avoid a whole food group altogether. And that is our more concerning picky eater. So those are the two. So those would be our more problem feeders that we would obviously do a big intervention with. But your general picky eating would be a child that maybe was eating six veggies and now will only eat one type of veggie, and was eating like five fruits and now will maybe only eat one fruit, or a child who will only eat veggies but not fruit, or only fruits and not veggies.
So let's start with that type of kind of picky eating, when it is like that they, you know, they're still getting in fruits, but they've got a preference for fruits. Should you be stricter to introduce variety, or do you just kind of ride that wave and be like, I'm choosing my battles here and this is not one of them?
So I think it's also important to understand the mechanisms behind picky eating. So there's a physical mechanism, which is a taste bud change. So there's a shift in their taste buds around the age of about a year, where they had an enormous amount of sweet taste buds in their mouth, and then the savory ones start to develop and start to kind of progress. And that's also genetically defined. So some children will always have more sweet taste buds, others will always have more savory. And then there's a shift where the bitter taste buds start to come to the fore. And those bitter taste buds are the ones that cause all the problems, especially with vegetables. Because vegetables, like your green veggies, have a bitter oil in them. And that bitter oil is suddenly realized and tasted for the first time by this child. So broccoli never tasted bitter. And that's why moms get so confused, because they're like, but he always ate his broccoli. And then suddenly he hits around 13 months and doesn't want the broccoli taste anymore. And that's because for the first time he's experiencing that bitterness.
This makes so much sense.
And the reason that happens is actually to protect them, because they start toddling around and walking around, and you know that they put everything in their mouth. And they're almost like on a death mission, a lot of them. And they'll walk into the garden and they'll pull like a leaf off, and that could be potentially poisonous. So anything poisonous or potentially poisonous in nature has a very bitter taste. And so those bitter taste buds are there to protect them eating something poisonous.
Does this get better again when they become like us, that they actually do, there's some vegetables that I'd love in eating? Does it change eventually?
It's really just taste bud training, and that just takes time to do. And so the more they're exposed, and like with all of us, the more we're exposed to a taste, the more our taste buds will be trained.
Great. More on this just now.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're just joining me, yes, you are on 101.9 High FM, and I am Yolandi Becker, your host of Bump and Beyond. And as always, we're talking parenting today, specifically about picky eating and the stresses that go with it, why it happens, and why it's actually quite normal. We've realized that they do go through phases, that all children are a little bit fussy and picky from what they eat. As always, I would love for you to join in the conversation. So if you have, because I've got a unique opportunity here, we're talking here to Kath McGaw today. So if you have questions for Kath, please do send me a telegram on 061-895-1019, or you can SMS us at 34519. SMSs are charged at 150 per SMS. If you have any questions, or if you just want to share about your grandchild or child that was a picky eater and things like that, because I remember my son was a lot more... It's also funny how if you look back, then you can reflect now on what you did wrong and right and whatever, and you can presume that's what you did wrong. But he was a lot more of a picky eater than what my daughter was. And I used to sneakily mask things in plain yogurt to get some stuff. I don't know if that's the right technique. Maybe, Kath, is that okay to do stuff like that? Because also... lots of these baby foods, I mean, you do get baby foods that are very specific to, like, it's only a vegetable, it's only a fruit type of thing, but then you do get like a mixture of things together. What would you say is best?
So So I think when it comes to the taste bud training that we were speaking at just before the ad break, you might need to mask flavors for a while because they, in order to tame the taste buds, they need to try the food, but they're often resistant to trying it in its pure form. And so masking it in other foods that are more, so for example, green veggies with more your orange veggies or your tomato bases are better. So often parents will just instinctively put veggies kind of blended up into like a bolognese. And that's quite a clever way to mask the flavor of a baby marrow or broccoli, that taste bit, so that the baby doesn't really want to taste. And when you are hiding flavors or hiding food, you've always got to be very aware, especially as they get older, that they don't discover that or figure it out, because then what they might do is avoid that particular food in future that they used to eat so well, because they won't trust you. So you don't want to break down the trust. So if you're going to do it, be clever, be wise, do it cleverly. But, and I'm not against it, but just be careful that they don't kind of figure it out and then end up not trusting any food that you start wanting to feed them, because it can become a little bit scary. And
now that you're talking about it, I mean, there's still a lot of stuff in my children's food that I technically mask. My daughter always says she hates onions, and I'm like, how do you hate onions? You eat onions all the time. And she's like, what? And I'm like, everything almost that I make has onions in it. And then she was very surprised by that. So at least I was honest about it. I thought she knew. But yeah, it does make me feel a little bit better about my yogurt masking technique. Not trying to make, what do you call it, excuses. Yeah, I mean, I was just winging it as a mom, I guess. But yes, the other thing that you then mentioned as well, I mean, obviously, you mentioned that before, there's the one picky eating side where they might have a preference for a certain vegetable or whatever, but at least they're not cutting out whole food groups. Mm-hmm. What do you do then if they do? Because my presumption is that they're cutting out the vegetables part of it. What do you do, and what happens? When do you need to be concerned when that happens?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what's interesting, actually, the latest research stats around picky eating, because there's so many people who actually study this all over the world at different centers, and actually 55% of kids who cut out a whole food group in the toddler years actually cut out the protein food group, which is...
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I wonder if it's because of the consistency of it.
Yeah, it is. And it's the effort to chew. So I think we must remember toddlers, which is your highest incidence of picky eaters, they are very busy little people, and they have other priorities, which is not eating. And they have a lot to accomplish, and eating is very interruptive in their day. So, you know,
if it takes a long time to chew a piece of meat, they don't have that kind of time.
Move on. So that is where protein is often the one that lacks. And that's the one that actually can cause a vicious cycle, which I call the picky eating vicious cycle, which is where a child that becomes a bit picky just because they can, because they're toddlers, they assert in their will, and that also plays a role in picky eating. And then because of that, they eat less, and they often eat less protein. And when they eat less protein, their body starts to panic a bit and go, oh, my word, are we going to go into starvation? And our body's job is to keep us alive, so it slows everything down. And then the child's appetite actually gets decreased. And so they have a lower appetite, which means they ask for less food. When they ask for less food, they then have a lower appetite. So this vicious cycle happens, and it happens very gently and slowly. And before you know it, your child's kind of not thriving and doing as well as what they could. So if they are cutting out, to parents out there, if they're cutting out a whole food group, whether it's your protein group or whether it's your second group, most common is your fruit and veg group altogether, you will need to possibly for a season give them a supplement. And that is very helpful to break that vicious picky eating cycle. And you would need to look at a supplement if it's the protein group that they're cutting out that contains protein in it. And give a protein powder on its own to your picky eater. You want to give a holistic supplement that's got It's got good calories, good protein, and so that there's a balance. Children can't cope with extreme amounts of a protein injection. So you want to give a supplement where it's got the whole kind of basis of calories in and the micronutrients that help with the absorption of protein as well. So it's a holistic supplement, and I normally recommend using that at the end of the day. So you give them an opportunity to eat during the day, and then you kind of fill the gaps at the end of the day. And it's always good to keep something like that on hand, because that just helps prevent that vicious cycle.
Yeah, I mean, this is so helpful as well. If I just think of my own son, and now that you mentioned the protein, he was actually quite like fussy about having, I pureed the foods for quite some time for him. A very inappropriate amount of time I pureed. Again, I know better now, but at that point he didn't like the consistency of certain things. And especially when it was like pieces of chicken or something else. Is it okay then to get the protein maybe from, you know, if you put egg in it, for instance, is it fine to change the protein around? It doesn't have to necessarily be, a piece of meat now.
Yeah, 100%. So I think it's really important to remember that nutrition trumps everything. So if you needed to puree for longer than what you believe you should have, then you did the right thing because you were giving him good nutrition. And so sometimes that really makes a difference if you can just give them like an easy-to-eat form of protein. Egg is wonderful. It's an absolutely wonderful source of protein. And it's the egg white that we need for the protein. So if a child is fussy with egg and they often don't like the yellow, you can mix and include the egg white into a lot of foods without them even realizing it's in there. I even have parents put it in like oats in the morning, or something like that, which you can't.
I still sometimes sneak it into certain. Yeah. They love these banana milk smoothie things that I make for them. Yeah. And sometimes, like today, before they have to go swimming at a gala today, I snuck some into that and they didn't even notice.
So obviously, with you've got older children, but with your like little ones, like your toddlers, we wouldn't give them raw egg whites. We would always make sure it's cooked, because obviously there's a risk of salmonella. In a raw egg white, which a toddler wouldn't cope with.
And that's also important to remember. Yeah, for sure.
So you can definitely sneak egg whites in, make egg pancakes. Pancakes kids love. I very often find kids who don't love pancakes. It's a lovely way you can, in your recipe, double up on the egg white to make it a more protein-rich pancake than using just a lot of egg yolk. So for every one egg, you can do two egg whites. And that's a very nice way to get that extra protein in.
Yes. So if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 Hive M. This is Bump and Beyond, and I'm your host, Yunandi Becker. And today we're specifically talking about picky eating with clinical pediatric dietitian Kath McGaw. She's also a mom. She's also an author. She's in some ways, if you don't know who Kath is, Google her, because then you'll find out lots about her. And we're talking, like I said, about picky eating and different ways that you can help with making sure that even if your child, and I mean, in some ways, like Kath was saying, it is very normal for children to go through phases of picky eating, but it is important for them to still get like a balanced diet with all the food groups. And in this different ways of doing it. Another one now on that different ways of doing it, I'm thinking of all these inappropriate examples, maybe. I'm not reflecting very good on my parenting necessarily, but actually maybe it reflects good on me and not on my mother. Because my kids, my mom is typical Afrikaans and she makes like boerekos and stuff on a Sunday. And she has a tendency to, because my kids always say, like, I love Oma's like vegetables a lot more than yours. And I'm like, yes, because she puts sugar in her pumpkin and she puts potatoes and salt and stuff on her green beans, and I'm steaming yours. So you're just actually tasting what vegetables are supposed to taste like. how strict should I be on, and how strict should we be on that? I mean, obviously sugar, too much sugar is not good for for any children, but for small children as well. Is it okay to make it more tasty for children? And where is the limit with regards to that?
So I think absolutely, we always want to make our food tasty, but we definitely don't want to add a whole lot of refined sugars. And we know that there are consequences to that way of eating, which, you know, the lifestyle diseases kind of talk to later on in life. And so parents these days in this generation and our generation, we're a lot more conscious of that. And I think we must keep that consciousness, and I'm all for that. I do think, though, we can be more creative, and we can definitely make green beans taste a bit nicer. There's nothing wrong with adding a little bit of herbs, adding maybe a little bit of a spice to that. Just, you know, dollying it up a bit is a good plan. If you want to sweeten your veggies, you can use a fruit to sweeten it. So you could use, for example, mix a bit of apple puree with some pumpkin. It's actually delicious, and for some kids it's just more appealing to them if they are tending that in that direction, because like I say, sweet tooth is inherited, and you can then train it to be excessive or more moderate, but the preference towards sweet versus savory is definitely more genetic inheritance. And so if your child has a leaning towards that, you can use a bit more fruit. They will be the child that will go in tend towards the fruit in the fruit and veggie group versus maybe the more savory. And then the children who have a more savory tooth won't be a big fan of a lot of fruit. And that's quite normal, and we do see that. So you can get a nice range by having both. Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking of, like, I've got one sweet tooth and one savory tooth. Yeah. So it's like, and a husband that doesn't eat seafood, and it's like, planning dinner in my household takes a logistical degree to do that. Anyway, so another question that I'm like wondering about is are you able to prevent picky eating?
So I think you can minimize picky eating. So like I say, it's actually quite a normal developmental process to go to a place where a child starts to develop their own taste preferences. It's part of ego development, where it's like, I am me. I'm a little person in this world, and I actually have a say in my space, what I wear. You know, and that's why toddlers, like, they're quite extreme at pushing boundaries. And really the reason they push the boundaries is they're trying to figure out what they have a say in and what they don't have a say in. And one of the areas they push boundaries a lot is in food. And so in order to prevent picky eating exacerbating into like a problem feeder, or, you know, a more severe kind of journey and a more difficult journey, would be the way you manage those early picky eating moments. So the first thing is, don't go into a battle. Don't start bribing and kind of, you know, going into that. Just have one extra, or if you have this, I will give you your ice cream, or I'll give you your sweet, or just have one more bite, then you can have a jelly top. Those type of things create a power struggle, because it basically says, you know, I'm going to try and entice you to do what I want you to do. And it never turns out well for us as parents, because they're going to call the shots then. They'll just decide, actually, I don't really want that jelly top. So you can say what you want. I'm not going to have my broccoli. So you're going to look like a fool in there. So those are little things that you want to avoid. And because that takes the power, you never want to bring power to the table.
No.
Because that makes it so you want to immediately go into, I eat when I'm hungry, I stop when I'm full. So if your little toddler is going through a fussy phase, starts a meal, gets bored with it, decides doesn't want it, make a big deal about saying, okay, so that means your tummy's full. That means you're done. Say, thank you, mommy, for the food. And even though they ate one bite, they then leave the table appropriately, leave the space wherever they're eaten appropriately, so that the message to their mind is, okay, I'm done. Then if 10 minutes later they come to you hungry, then you say, no, you're done and it's over. You can come back to eat the food if you're still hungry, but if you're done, that's fine. So you're saying, I respect that you may be full, but we also have boundaries here, and this is the feed-in boundary.
Yeah.
So there's no fighting, there's no bribing, there's no screaming. It's that.
I really like that, because for me, I mean, as an adult, if I just think about it, I still struggle to, because, I mean, again, growing up in an Afrikaans household, you don't, and still to this day, I struggle to leave food in my plate. I have to finish my plate. And I always say to my, because my husband's not like that at all. He can just leave and I'm like, there's such a small piece of meat left. How can you just leave that? My mind just, but that is the right way to do it because he's full. He's not eating until his plate's clean. He's eating until he's full. So, yeah, I mean, I think those type of behaviors around the dinner table or any eating table, obviously, is like is helpful. I think to have healthy perceptions as adults as well with food. So I love that whole idea of doing that. I think just now we are going to have to go to, but before we go, how do you introduce though then? Like new foods too. But I mean, that being said, before we get to that, I have to also share with you that even though I've just mentioned to all of you all these mistakes, I guess, I made also with my son, he's a very adventurous eater now that he's 12 years old. He's really, so I do feel that if you have this base, like what Kath was talking about, and have healthy perceptions about food, they will become, my son is such an adventurous eater. I mean, in some ways, he eats sushi, he eats prawns, he eats very weird things as well. And he's always willing to try new food. So he is a bit of a foodie already and he's 12. So it is very interesting how this journey also evolves with children. But more on that just now after the ad break.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
If you've just joined me, you've missed most of the show. But you are on 101.9 Hive M. And this is Bump and Beyond. And today I've been speaking to Kath McGaw about picky eating. So don't despair if you've missed it, luckily, because this will be available as a podcast afterwards. And you can go access this podcast and all of our podcasts on hivem.com. So before we went to ad break, Kath, I was mentioning to you also that my son is now such a, he's a great adventurous eating. So eventually, though, it does come get better, I feel, if you've got the right attitude as well. But in the same breath, I mean, you now saying like we should be healthy about the feeding that we're giving them. But how then do we know if our children are having actually enough food? I mean, you could also not just be like, okay, you said you're not hungry anymore, it's done.
And I think therein lies the challenge, because parents will then so quickly want to offer more food so quickly after a meal that wasn't really eaten, because they never want to know that the thought that you're not giving your child enough food is terrible. So what I suggested to help with that, there are two things. The one is to have regular opportunities for your child to eat throughout the day, so that at the one meal, you know, they don't have too much. And then you know that in 2 hours' time, they've got a snack opportunity. And we always say toddler snacks are as important as their meals. And that gives them another opportunity to have something to eat. And then there's a gap. And then they have another opportunity. So there's regular opportunities, but not regular feeding. Regular feeding makes the picky eating journey that much worse, because if you are constantly tasting while you're cooking supper, by the time you sit down to eat, you're not really hungry because you've had these little bits, but you haven't actually had enough to eat. So it's the same with a toddler. If they're constantly having a bite here, a bite there, and you're kind of running after them with every bite opportunity, they never have a moment where they feel that hunger. And that's the one thing that is going to help us to drive a good meal.
No.
So that is the one thing. And then the final thing is what we have mentioned is your supplement.
No.
So I have that at the end of the day to fill the gap.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, that was a big learning thing as well. I'm wishing that I supplemented more for my children when they went through these phases, because I do think I supplemented in the bad way. I gave my children milk as toddlers in the middle of the night. And obviously that is a lot worse than what it does any good. But let's not go too much into that topic, because I might get on my soapbox just now. Kath, before you go, please let people know where they can follow you, find you, and contact you.
Yeah, so I think the easiest way is to follow me on our NutriPeds website. We've got a website, we've got a Facebook page, we've got Instagram. The handles are just at NutriPeds, NutriPeds. And on my website, you can contact us direct through the website. There is an email address on there, and you can also just make a fill in a contact form.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me. I love chatting with you, Kat. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for having me.